Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to Jersey Coastal Live. I'm Andrea Tarr. And you know, it's still February. It's still the month of love. So we have one more episode on love today. And today we're meeting with a filmmaker, Stephen Loring, who is the producer and director of a movie called The Age of Love. It's really no ordinary movie, actually. It's a documentary, and this is about love in the 70 to 90 age group, which is not your typical, in our age, our youth-obsessed culture, it's not typically the age that we think about being in love. But this is a story of a kind of a speed dating adventure that took place in Rochester, New York. Very interesting stuff, and I feel really lucky that Stephen Loring, the filmmaker, agreed to be with me today. So, Stephen, thank you for being here.
Hi, Andrea. Thank you.
Oh, my pleasure. And since we have so much to talk about, I figure we need to just get right to it. But the first thing I want to ask you about, I noticed that it said that you are a social documentary filmmaker and that you focus on creating films that examine the cultural and interior lives of unfamiliar and overlooked populations. And I just wonder how you came to that. As opposed to more of a classic documentary kind of a person or filmmaker?
That's a good question. I've always been a writer. I started out writing, and I was a screenwriter, worked on the ubiquitous movies of the week, the genre that was popular on television in, I guess, 80s, 90s, up to around the time that reality TV appeared and destroyed that whole genre of TV filmmaking. But I worked on movies that were about, you know, they're based on a true story and inspired by a true story.
Okay.
And, you know, there's a lot of, you know, sometimes they were called disease of the week. But I guess, you know, my instinct was always to, like, to do research and write from reality. And
okay.
I found myself, you know, working on projects that were really, you know, more driven by, I guess, advertising and the needs of the TV studio system than they really were by addressing the reality of the world I saw around me. And so, you know, after a while, it became a little frustrating. I remember once I was hired to write a film that had to do with a serial rapist, and I actually found a group, it was in New Jersey, I think, or somewhere in Connecticut,
mm-hmm.
perhaps, that was when people who were sex offenders got together to have, like, psychological group therapy and
like
to sit in.
Group?
Exactly, and to sit in and
yeah.
to see, you know, how they talk, what they remembered. And I was so fascinated by that. And, you know, the people in Hollywood were kind of like, it's a TV movie. Just write, you know, you've seen 1,000 TV movies. Just write it, you know. And so I guess I evolved a little bit and
mm-hmm.
decided that what I saw around me in my own world, I mean, as I got a little bit older, it wasn't so much about being on TV. It was about expressing who I was in the world. And so I don't know, I've just been interested in the research end of it. And I guess I'm not big on, you know, schlepping all my equipment to Sudan or something. So
mm-hmm.
I started looking around in my backyard. And the first short film I made was called Shacharit, A Morning Prayer. And I was given access to a very old world synagogue and a very Hasidic community in New York City, and I showed up several days and filmed the morning prayer service. And just the idea that right in our own backyards there's all these cultures, there's all these belief systems, there's all these people who are really invisible that we overlook and that have such
yeah.
rich lives and traditions and rituals and worlds. And you know, that became a fascination of mine. And then I realized, well, for other reasons too, but, you know, older people are by and large invisible in our
yes,
society.
Very true.
And so finding a way into that culture and exposing something that we walk past every day and never see was really interesting to me.
Well, you're definitely absolutely right that they are a very invisible part of society, and especially this aspect of the elderly, love and sex and romance, that is a very off-limits topic for many, many people, probably even including some senior citizens. But now,
I was going to say that some of the biggest stereotypers of seniors are seniors themselves, interestingly enough. It's not all just placed upon them by the younger generations.
Well, I even noticed that right in the beginning of the movie, and we'll get into that in a moment, but your movie, The Age of Love, so what inspired, I know indirectly your mom is part of the inspiration for this movie.
It was a personal movie. I guess, again, going back to my desire to look at the world around me, and knowing that any documentary film that's, you know, unfunded and is going to be a labor of love had better be about something that I'm passionate about, because it's going to take me several years to make it. And I wanted it to be a journey that I could sustain and be really excited by throughout. So at the time I was looking for, I was in school at the time. I had left Hollywood and I had enrolled in School of Visual Arts Social Documentary Film School, which teaches specifically the social documentary film technique. And this was my graduate thesis project I was looking for. And my dad had passed away. My dad had just passed away recently, and my mom was nearing 70, and she was, you know, for the first time in her life, she was without an emotional intimacy that left her kind of adrift, I think, in a way that I had never, you know, seen before. And that same year, it was really an odd coincidence, but an uncle of mine in his mid-70s or late-70s, who had never been on a date as far as anybody in the family knew his entire life, suddenly he met a woman. She was his own age, and they just became inseparable. I mean, it was like they were in high school again. Their bedroom door was locked, and that was it. You know, so...
Yes.
All these people around me, there was all these questions about the emotional lives of people that were swirling around me. And so I thought, if I could find a way into that topic filmically, well, it would be really valuable, because there's nothing really in terms of mass media. I mean, there's some feature films out now that are starting to explore aging topics, you know, more things that are looking at the hearts of older people. But in terms of documentaries, there really wasn't anything. So, you know, I looked around and found I looked everywhere for a story, you know, at senior communities, Sun City and the villages, and I traveled around the country and asking. And then, I came across a couple of speed dating events that were happening, and one in Colorado Springs and one down in Florida. And it just, you know, immediately, like when I told people about it, they just broke out in hysterical laughter. So I thought, that's it, you know, that's a hook.
Yeah.
People will see a movie like that. And on top of that, what better way into the hearts of a generation than by people who are putting themselves out there at 70 to 90 years old to find something new. So that's how it came about.
Okay, so you actually already had in mind that you wanted to do a project on old age and hear this. How did you locate the project in Rochester? That's where
the project
movie is set.
Right. I searched all over the country for a project, for a speed dating event for seniors that would happen in the time needed, since it was my grad thesis project. It had to happen in a certain window. And actually, I grew up in Rochester, so I have, you know, a lot of contacts, and it happens to be a very healthy aging, pro-aging city for some reason. For decades, there has been a real huge movement there to be friendly and accessible and alive to the needs of older adults. And there were a bunch of organizations up there, Lifespan and Jewish Senior Life and the JCC and a group called Senior Fitness. And they all, when they heard that I was interested in doing a film about this, they all said, you know, what a great idea. We'll do a speed dating event for seniors, which made life easier for me, of course, because then I could embed myself in it. I mean, assuming I got permission from the people who signed up,
right.
I could embed myself from the beginning. So that's how I came to Rochester.
Well, now going back to seniors being their own worst enemies and giving out those stereotypes, I remember in the very beginning of the movie, and I'll tell everyone who's listening, I did get the opportunity to see the movie. It was screened, and we'll talk about that later. But one of my favorite characters in the movie is Janice. And in the very beginning of the movie, you've got some sound bites, I guess just people talking maybe on the phone about when they first find out about the speed dating. And her reaction is, oh, my God, they'll come with their walkers and their canes.
Right.
And you know what?
Well,
it wasn't really like that.
Well, you know, yeah, I mean, there's another woman who said something even, you know, more nasty about older people in that same scene.
Addie
says, yeah. What you're hearing in that part of the film are my initial calls to these people as I reached out to see if they would be interested in being in the film. I assumed they wouldn't. Immediately, I assumed being, you know, a little bit younger and having stereotypes of my own of age, that the people would be embarrassed kind of to be in a, maybe they didn't tell their kids they were looking for, you know, a new companion. Maybe they don't want their faces on movie screens across America. I don't know. So, you know, but I started calling them and was amazed to find out that not only were they interested, they were excited by the possibility.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one woman said, nobody in the world asks me what's in my heart anymore. In terms of, you know, everybody addresses me in terms of, you know, my finances, my health care. But it's like everybody thinks I'm past that, you know, and that's what society teaches. So, and I'm not. I mean, there's a lot to tell. And so I went through all 30 people to get releases, you know, to see if they would participate. And everybody, you know, signed a release. They said, well, sure. What do we have to lose, you know? Nobody knows about us anyway, you know, let's start a conversation about it. So that's the cool thing, is that these were really pioneers. They were people who were born, you know, back in the World War II generation. They really weren't boomers. They were a little bit
edge
of the...
Yes.
Right. So, you know, I thought if, you know, they grew up, you know, when they were kids, thinking, you know, one career, one wife, one family, you know, that's it.
Mm-hmm.
So if they signed up for speed dating, then they've really got to be pioneers to be thinking that they're going to do this, like, newfangled dating thing, you know, maybe 50 years since they've last been out on a date.
Right.
So we all agreed that
they were very gutsy to
yes.
allow themselves to be filmed, and pioneers. That is exactly the right word. Because they could have never imagined such a thing going on in their lifetime, I'm sure.
Right.
Yeah.
But, they they did look at each other. I mean, getting back to your original question, you know, given the fact that they were from that age range, they grew up with stereotypes. They grew up with grandparents that probably, you know, retired at 60 or 65 and then had a few golden years, sat in a rocking chair. One man in the film, the line isn't in the film, but he said to me, you know, when I was growing up, my grandmother, you know, sat in a rocking chair. He said, I'm 72. My mom is 94 and she still lives alone. You know, some of the people at the speed dating still, you know, had parents around that they were, you know, were independent. So it's a new world. And those stereotypes, you know, are startling to a generation of people that, you know, have to see themselves. They're not just pioneers in speed dating. They're also the first time really in the history of the world where there's this fourth generation of people, this 75 to 100-year-old generation of people that are really active and really alive and really looking to live life and not just, you know, have some golden years and fade away.
Now, I love the fact that, again, they were such a gutsy group of people, and they truly see this. The speed dating event itself seemed to be a lot of fun. It was pretty interesting to sort of eavesdrop on some of the people listening to what do you have, 5 minutes per person?
Right.
I think that, yeah. some people just talked about all of their aches and pains and what ails them. I thought, you know, that's one way to use your 5 minutes. Where some people revealed, you know, a lot of really good personal information. So you, I mean, for you, you were like the fly on the wall. And how did you find that speed dating event? What was it like for you?
Oh gosh, I was trying to be the fly on the wall. I mean, you know, you have a camera, and there was a decision I guess I kind of made early on, which is that the film wasn't going to have a film crew. It was just going to be me, because
you were the crew.
I wanted.
Yeah.
Pardon me?
You were the crew. You did everything, correct?
Well, I figured if there was a cameraman or a boom operator, whatever I brought along was only going to be a barrier between relationships that I wanted to grow with these people and intimacies I wanted to develop so they would open up to me. So, you know, every step of the way, it was how do I film this effectively and professionally but not get in the way? So, you know, we ended up having little table mics. You know, nobody wore, you know, lavs or lapel mics. There was no boom.
Got it.
And I would, you know, myself, and there were two people I brought in to, so we could cover more tables. And we just kind of hovered around and tried the best we could to be totally inconspicuous. And, you know, you don't know what the people are going to say. You don't know how they're going to react. I had no clue who would get a date. I mean, it was pretty funny because, you know, there were 30 people who signed up, and I had 3.5 weeks from the time they signed up till the event. So I had to film all 30 people because, you know, heaven knows who I might include in the film in the end that might get a date. I needed that footage. I would never be able to go back and get it again.
Exactly. Yeah.
But once I knew the people, I guess, and then I went to the speed dating and I watched them, you know, knowing them individually, watching them interact with each other with my own expectations of, like, who might match up and who might actually be a good pairing. That was pretty funny because there was a lot of unexpected humor and things that came out when people opened their mouth. But they weren't, you know, self-conscious about the camera. They were so used to my being around already that they really just did plunge in and open themselves up, I think, as best they could.
I thought there were a lot of very funny moments. Some of them were tender, some of them were sad, but most of it was extremely upbeat and moments of hilarity, really. Addie was a wonderful free spirit, and I can remember, I believe it was her, when she's talking to one gentleman, he's just got his mouth open, he can't believe what she's telling him, that she's, you know, hiked in Vietnam, she's, you know, dance till dawn. Didn't she go out of a parachute out of a plane? I mean,
what hadn't
she done? And this poor guy was—I mean, he just sat there with his mouth open. He probably thought, "Wow, she's way over my head."
Well, then what did he end up saying?
Very funny.
Right. He leaned forward then and he said, "In my opinion, I'm not going to travel anymore." And she says, "Well, why?" And he goes, "I did that when I was in college." You know,
that's
and I thought,
right.
never
college.
Again. And she says, but why? Why wouldn't you? And she said, to be honest, you're never quite sure what happens, you know. And that was so contrary to Addie's entire, you know, way of life that it just, you can see that they're the same age, but they just have a whole different take. And, you know, that's another thing, I guess, that, you know, in our world, people in their 20s, I mean, or 30s, we know what that is, you know, searching for love, finding a family, establishing your career.
Mm-hmm.
They're, you know, everybody is on an individual path. But we have this kind of a sense in America, or maybe in the whole world, I don't know, but in America for sure, that once you're past a certain age, you're kind of like in the land of old. And old is not individuals. Old is defined as people who are past, you know, all the good stuff in life and are now on a course of deterioration and, you know, we know what they want and it's certainly not love. So to see one thing the film does, I think, is brings out how individual these people are and how nothing has really changed. I mean, a lot of these people, as we see them later when they're opening up their results envelopes, they could be in high school again, to, you know, from the joy to the despair that come out. You know, it's not one, it's not, oh, okay, I'm old, whatever. They were really emotionally invested in being either accepted or rejected. And it was, that was pretty eye-opening to me.
That was one of the more intense part of the movies. And again, my audience found that some of it was very hard. It was upsetting how some people just, well, some people found such joy in that they had, oh, my God, I have two matches. This is fabulous. And one woman in particular said she had two matches, therefore she had, what was it, 15 rejections.
13 rejections. Yeah, she saw it totally the opposite.
Right.
Yes.
And
right.
She just spun the whole thing into rejection. And I remember she said, I'm crushed.
Yeah,
and you're right.
It was
like high school. It was, that was very hard to watch. She was very sad. I didn't expect that. Reaction from her. And the gentleman who was the bodybuilder. And he was a very cool character. I liked him, but he also seemed very disappointed that there weren't enough women who found him attractive. And you're right.
But he got one match.
Well, yeah, but he was hoping for many more.
Sure.
Interesting. Interesting how that all, it is like we, in some ways, my takeaway was, you know, people really just don't change. And one gentleman who was 80, and I don't remember his name, but I remember him saying, I don't think I could ever be interested in a 70-year-old woman.
right.
And I thought, wait a minute, you're 80. But,
right.
You
well,
know, yeah. We're all looking, we're all trying to find that, that connection. And obviously it's no easier when you're older.
It's, well, there's a quote I came across somewhere. It's still in my head somewhere that said, the great secret old people share is that our bodies change, but we don't change at all. And that's really kind of, you know, what it maybe it sounds obvious, but you know, it's not obvious in the way that we look at age in America. We assume everything changes. And there's, it's time to define age in terms of the voices of the people who are old, not of, young people who are just assume things. And that's, I think that's really the whole point of the film, is it brings voices to the screen, and as you say, it's very. I think the movie is a comedy. I mean, it's a comic documentary. If you had to describe, or a poignantly comic documentary.
There you go. That's the way.
It's a way in to a world that we need to understand through the voices of the people who are living it, and I didn't. In the movie, we don't meet their families of the speed daters. We don't visit them when they're at dinner with their kids, or because that wasn't the point of it. We can assume that maybe their kids are supported, maybe they're not, whatever. But this was a chance for older adults to just speak out and say what was in their heart, and to have an experience that they never expected really that they would have again in their lives. and watched the bits and pieces of who they really were that were dormant for so many years under the surface start to bubble up again, that's pretty cool. It was really amazing for me to watch. And I think, that's the heart of the film, that we don't change.
Well, I think it's true, and that you're giving a voice to a generation of people who don't get to express those feelings. And I just think back, to my own parents, and it certainly would have never been something that I would have ever addressed with my mother, that I would have ever discussed with her, that she would have ever discussed with me. But I know my mother dated in her 70s and 80s.
Really?
And I think she would have been a good speed dater. Yeah, she did. And my brothers and I were very supportive. She was pretty good about that. But I know that for a lot of people, they really just feel very closed off. But they want it. They miss it. They're craving
well,
that.
the opportunity isn't there, as you know, some people said in the movie. What are we going to do? Go to a bar? You know, what's going to actually one of the characters, Nancy. Again, this part wasn't in the film, but she describes her going. She actually went to a bar, and she sat and she actually struck up a conversation with a young man. And he told her all about his girlfriend, and he bought her a drink, and she was like really flying, you know, thinking. And then she, I think she went back a couple of times, but it didn't work out. I mean, not to see him, but to the bar, thinking like maybe this is an actual option. But you know, that's, I think that's one of the things that the movie really brought. And that's, I should say, one of the goals of the whole outreach project, which is ongoing now that we've launched the film into the world, which is not just to screen the film all over the country, but to bring speed dating events for seniors to communities after we screen the film and really make a difference, like on the ground in people's lives, not just start conversations, but start relationships, you know. And it's not, you know, how can I say it? It's not a matter of we're trying to get people hooked up or married. It's the speed dating is kind of a fun cover for the goal, which is really to empower people, not to, you know, don't want to scare people away by thinking like you're going to go to speed dating because, you know, somebody is going to, you know, just become like your husband or get you in bed. It's not about that. It's about giving people a chance to meet other people in their generation who are available and interested and out there. And just to feel, even if they don't come away with a match, that they can do this, that this opportunity exists in the world for them. And, you know, the one guy says at the end of the movie, Matt, he said, I haven't found the love of my life yet, but I feel more aggressive now. He said, I never used to talk to women in the grocery store, but I do now. And he said, and then I went online. He said, I went to eHarmony and they put all my information online. And just listening to that and thinking, I mean, here's a 79-year-old man, you know, he has a with an oxygen tank, and he's to eHarmony because why not? Why not find love? So that was pretty cool.
He was a good character. And, you know, he would be someone who would be, you might look at him and say, well, he's got an oxygen tank, he rolls it around with him. I don't think so. I don't think he's for me. But you know what? He was a wonderful personality, and he was warm and welcoming. And he also got a match. I remember that in the movie.
He got three matches, and, right?
And I remember him saying the line that you just said. Yeah.
Let me tell you, I'll tell you one interesting thing about Matt. I hope this doesn't reflect badly on me, but when he signed up for the speed dating, and oh gosh, I went out to meet him, and you know, because he signed up through a health organization, and they said, well, he's got an oxygen tank and a walker and a hearing aid, and you know, okay, I'm thinking what everybody else is thinking, right? That this is not going to fly. I mean, it's just, not only is it going to be hard for him to deal with this, but he's probably not going to do very well. And all the prejudices I brought along with me as a filmmaker, that became part of my journey. So anyway, I went over just by myself without my equipment to his apartment, thinking, well, I'll talk to him, you know, I'll see what his intentions are. Maybe he'll decide not to do it. And I went in, and he sat down. I sat down with him, and he started telling me, you know, about memories of falling in love and meeting his wife and what it means since she died 5 years ago, and how there's somebody in his apartment complex that he's really excited to like get to know again. And you know, it took me 10 minutes, and I said, don't say another word. I'm going to go home and get my camera equipment, and we're going to start filming.
Yeah.
And he became the absolute epitome of what the movie is about, which is that to him, he didn't see himself as somebody, you know, with portable oxygen. He saw himself as a viable, exciting, interesting person who wants to stand on the beach and enjoy the sunset with a woman again. And why not?
Mm-hmm.
And he got dates. So there you go.
That's right. And he got dates. So, yeah, he kind of proved the entire stereotype wrong, which I thought was fantastic. Now, I love the fact that Janice and John, they sort of had a nice match, those two characters, and they pranked you, which was until we realized what happened, my audience at the screening, we were like flipping out. Oh my God. But you, you were shocked.
Well, we'll leave the specifics of that for people when they screen the movie because it's
we're not going to tell anybody what happened.
I was standing there obviously with my camera just thinking in my head, okay, just keep rolling and stay in focus.
Mm-hmm,
you know, if I have to throw it away, I have to throw it away. But I had no idea what was going on. And it was, it was a test of the filmmakers, you know, nerve, I guess, just to not go, come on, guys, like, I'm trying to make a movie here. And as it turned out, when I looked at the footage later, I thought, you know, this is golden because this shows that these two people, never having met and at this age in their life, share a amazing humor and outlook and sense of fun, and they had already connected so strongly before their first date, even based on what this trick was. So it was very funny.
Well, there was an audible gasp in the audience.
There always is, yes.
People were like, oh, my God, this cannot be happening. But it turned out fabulous, and it really was wonderful. Now, I know that we'll wrap up so you can get on with the rest of your stuff here. But I just want to say, I know that what your goal right now is that you're trying to get more and more screenings of this movie out in the community.
There's different ways of distributing a movie, and what I guess I finally decided after looking at all the options is, you know, you could put it in 25, you know, multiplexes around the country, you know, next to Transformers and hope for the best, or, you know, maybe take it out to there's a huge audience that's really eager to see, like I said before, the voices of this generation honestly portrayed. And the goal of the film as a social, going back to your original question, a social documentary filmmaker is not necessarily to wow Hollywood, but to start a conversation in the country, to get the media involved and to make a difference in people's lives. So we're aiming to have over the next year, we just kicked it off on Valentine's Day, and we have, at that point, we had about 83 screenings set up. Over the next year, hopefully, we'll get up to 1,000 screenings for universities, for senior centers, for 55-plus residential communities, for any group. We just screened with Age Healthy Portland. We had premiered it at the AARP National Expo in Boston this past year. There's a lot of organizations that really will bring in people that can, hopefully start a groundswell of discussion around the topic, and along with speed dating events in different communities, see if this is something we can spearhead in America in terms of the core goals of the film, and not just as an entertaining movie. So that's what we're doing now, and there's a page on our website, at theageoflovemovie.com, a page where you can write in and we'll get you information on how to bring the movie to your group, your community, your university, and also work with you to do a speed dating event, too. So I would encourage people to look at that for sure.
Well, after we're finished here and I put up my blog, I will put links to all of that so people don't have to worry about writing anything down. But the movie has the most amazing tagline: it's never too late to date. I just love that. And I know the speed dating was 70 to 90, and I haven't reached that point in my life yet, 70, but I'm not so far away that I can't imagine it. And as I was watching the movie, I just found myself wondering, I'm sure along with other people in the audience, would I do that? Would I put myself out there at 70 plus years old? I hope I would be gutsy enough to do that, because that is seriously gutsy. I think, we talked earlier, we screened it. My audience was very fond of the movie. They felt the characters, they related to a lot of the characters. There were moments of hilarity, moments of sadness, very poignant. But it really struck a nerve because it's the emotional part of you that most people don't address. Certainly not with your family, maybe with your friends. But I was
I think,
also happy
to
see men in the audience. We had men and women, so that was nice.
Right, there's fewer of them, but they're still out there, and they're still lonely. They're single men who are lonely,
yeah,
so it's
yeah.
Not a, I just want to say, in terms of what you're saying there, is that I've had, you know, we've screened it at universities or at for younger audiences, and they said they were rapt by it. They said, I'll never look at my grandparents the same way again. You know, it's the idea that this is not a movie to inspire old people. It's not a movie aimed at showing like a special community of older people or a talent.
Mm-hmm,
it's about
mm-hmm.
a human emotion. The takeaway, you know, is that we're all looking ahead in life and wondering what lies ahead. And we all understand what it is to search for love, to be wanted, to be seen,
yeah.
to be accepted by another human being. So hopefully the movie is a way in. You know, it's not just a movie for older people. It's a way into understanding who we are as a society as demographics change and the years go by in a different way through love.
Well, you also had on Vimeo, you had a little a short video, and I think it wasn't the question like, what do you think of speed dating for 70-year-olds? And you interviewed, there were a lot of young people that answered the question, but
right.
they were overwhelmingly positive. Wow, I think that's great. It was nice to see that they reacted so positively toward that. I was thinking the young people, that's my stereotype now, I was thinking they'd say, oh, that's ridiculous, you know, like, serious? No way. But they didn't. They gave it a really good reaction. Definitely.
We screened last week at Quinnipiac College up in Connecticut, and they had an audience
mm-hmm.
that was split half and half with students and seniors from the community. And I wasn't there, but I was told there was an amazing interactive debate afterwards about stereotypes and people's minds. They could see people changing their minds when confronted by, with younger people confronted by older people saying being called
yeah.
cute sounds patronizing, and older people being you know, addressed by younger people saying, we don't mean it to be that, we're trying, you know, we feel affection, but maybe we don't know how to express it. And gosh, if a movie can do something like that, then it's a huge success, you know, multiplex or no.
We also talked about that at our screening, which was obviously much old, an older crowd. And was it the DJs on the radio station? They said, oh, a speed dating event for people 70 to 90. Oh, that's cute. That's adorable.
Right.
But my audience, we didn't like those words because that
right.
we felt that was demeaning. It's not cute and
right.
adorable. You know, it was, you know, it's real. It's from the heart. So that was our reaction.
It's in there because it's narrative, you know, it explains the movie, but it's also in there because it does set up the issue. You know, that is what's out there today.
Yes.
And, you know, even in right there in the top of the movie, in popular media, on the radio, we're hearing those stereotypes being, you know, being repeated.
Always.
So,
always.
Yeah. Thank you for
yeah.
picking up on those little subtle touches. That's very, very...
Well, that was something that really bothered us all collectively in my group. Yeah, definitely. No, we did. We paid attention. So, Stephen, I want to say thank you for being with me today. We went a little bit over, but I appreciate your time. And again, for all my listeners, I will put a link on my blog so that you can find Stephen's website and find out more about him. And I'm thinking we're in my day job, we are planning on hosting a speed dating event, and I think it's going to be great fun, and I'm excited to do it as well. So normally when I close my show, I'll say it anyway, I always say, can 30 minutes change your life? But this time I'm going to say, Stephen, in your honor, it's never too late to date, because I absolutely mean that. I totally
Thank
mean
you.
That. So
we'll
I'm Andrea
that.
Tarr. Thank you so much for being with me today, to all my listeners, and special thank you to filmmaker Stephen Loring, producer-director of the film The Age of Love. Okay, thanks for being with me, and goodbye, Steve. It's been a pleasure. Take care, Stephen.
Okay, take care. You too.
Bye.